That's it.
It's over.
Game over.
Game over, man.
It's over.
It's time for the Chicago Blackhawks postgame show.
Give me the postgame.
On the Blackhawks Radio Network. Here's Charlie Remeliotis.
Welcome into the Blackhawks postgame show. Charlie Remeliotis here at the United Center. The sad organ music is back in the background after a 4-2 loss to the Boston Bruins. I haven't introduced you yet, Troy. Why are you laughing? God,
sad music?
It's sad organ music. When they leave here with a win, the tone is much different. Blackhawks fans know what I'm talking about. It is. Pay attention to it next time.
Yeah, I've only been doing this 20 years. You'd think sooner or later I'd figure that out.
You know what? I will give this to you. This isn't as sad as it usually is.
Okay, but I'll be quiet until you bring me in.
Okay, you can call or text 312-981-7200 to chime in. All right, now let's bring in the great Troy Murray sitting next to me on with a headset who is grading my question skills in the first and second intermission. I thought the second intermission was the first intermission, but water under the bridge. How we doing tonight?
Well, not so good. I was hoping for some better results in this game.
Yep.
As we all were.
Same. How do you sum this one up? Hawks scored the first goal of this hockey game early on. It was a minute and 23 in. They had the momentum, but unfortunately they weren't able to build on that lead and capitalize on it, and they leave this hockey game falling 4-2.
Man, I didn't, you know, they weren't good enough in this game. They didn't execute what they needed to do, and you know, you got a tired group of Bruin players. They got in extra late last night. They had some mechanical issues leaving the Boston area after the game, and they kind of sat on the tarmac for an hour and a half, and then, you know, they get in here at 2:30, and that's 3:30 their time, but didn't take advantage of it. I just didn't think they pushed the issue. I thought that they were a little bit lax in their defensive zone coverage. Faceoffs first two periods were a major factor in Boston controlling puck possession right off the draws, and you know, I thought that in that game against Toronto where they lost 4-1, they deserved to win that game. I'm not sure they deserve to win this game tonight. They need to do a lot of things better.
It was weird looking at the six goals that were scored in this game. All six of them came at 5-on-5. There weren't any that were on the power play. So from the perspective of the Hawks scored 2 5-on-5 goals, that's a positive, but they didn't get any on the power play. And, of course, they allowed Boston to get four of their own. And Boston came in here struggling to score 5-on-5 as well.
Yeah, you look at it, both teams averaging just under 2.5 goals per game. So Boston increasing that. Their record under their new interim head coach, Joe Sacco, now Sacco 6-2. So they're finding a little bit of their identity. I thought that they were better defensively than the Hawks were. They clogged up that middle of the ice where the Blackhawks allowed a couple really good prime A opportunities for Boston in that area. And I didn't think Peter Mrazek was as sharp as he has been this season. Last couple games, maybe he's getting a little bit tired. He's had a tough workload, but you know, it just seems like his glove is missing some plays. The shot that came in that he thought that he had it from Geeky, and then it was in behind him. You know, that's one that we've seen him just gobble up and get the whistle. So, you know, a lot of things that the Hawks have been doing well just kind of didn't factor into the equation here in this loss.
I kind of agree. It doesn't feel like Peter Mrazek has looked like himself the last few games. And I actually want to throw this out there. I know a couple weeks ago he had left the team due to personal reasons. And I heard he was trying to navigate that situation, and he's been traveling to try to navigate the situation at home. And so it's. I'm sure that's been a lot too, and I'm not sure how much that is playing a role. But you're right; he has been getting a heavier workload lately. You know, you'd like to see the Blackhawks kind of divide it up a little bit more evenly, I guess, to keep both guys fresh. But I'll say this about Mrazek: I think they expect him to be so great that when he kind of comes down back to earth a little bit, it just kind of magnifies Chicago's flaws a little bit more.
Yeah, I you know, you look at his high save percentage for high quality chances, one of the tops in the NHL. So the Blackhawks had been giving up those opportunities, kind of masked a little bit by the good play of Peter Mrazek. And, you know, maybe there is something. I would never try to go into somebody's personal
sure.
life and see what's been going on, but he just doesn't seem like he's been quite the same the last couple of games, and maybe it is, and hopefully there's no big issue that he's dealing with, but obviously there's something behind the scenes that he had to deal with. he's been great, and he brings a great attitude. I know that he wants to play, and he wants to be the guy, and it just, you know, I think he needs a little bit more support. And when we've talked about those last couple seasons where that when the team struggles to create offense, it puts the goaltending in a position where they feel that they have to be almost perfect to win games, to get points out of games. And you wish that you're in a position where, you know, a team scoring 3.5 goals per game, and you know, that's the average. So you're getting some really good production. And, you know, even look at Soderblom's record, you know, 1-5-1. He hasn't got any goal support this year, and he's played extremely well. So I think it's frustrating for the team. This was not the type of game they wanted to play, and I think they gave up too many opportunities. And the Boston's top guys came through and got the job done. You had Marchand playing a strong game. He picked up a couple goals for the Bruins. And Geeky with two goals as well. So, and Pasternak with some big assists. So their key players came and performed better than the Blackhawks' key players. I think that, you know, there was a lot of good things that I saw in this game as well. I thought the Maroon line was good. I thought Dickinson's line was good. But really right now you're looking at the guys who were supposed to produce offensively, and you're just not getting it.
This was the fourth game in a row where the Blackhawks gave up a goal immediately after or within kind of like a few minutes after either scoring one themselves or giving one up. It was when Boston went up 2-1, David Pasternak to Brad Marchand. 2 minutes and 5 seconds later, Marchand scored his second goal of the game. What can they do to kind of shore up the shifts after either goals for or goals against? Because it feels like that, it didn't feel like that was a trend early in the season, but now it's kind of becoming one after it was more of a talking point last year.
Yeah, I think there's some frustration in how that's kind of all panning out this year. And there's no explanation for it other than, as Luke Richardson says, you have to be able to kill plays under pressure. And, you know, you want to make sure that, and the Blackhawks have not scored. When's the last time they've scored two quick goals? It really hasn't been that situation. So they haven't backed up, you know, a goal and then come right back and score another goal and build on that. You know, it's a kind of a one and done, and now you wait and see, and the other team scores a goal and another, you know, two quick goals, as you mentioned, just over 2 minutes. You know, those are the kind of things that really suck the wind out of your sails as you move forward in a game. And, you know, for this team, I think right now, you know, they're struggling to find some confidence in their team game right now because they're not getting results. And you heard Nick Foligno talking about it in that loss to Toronto. It's like, yeah, you know, we played well and there was a lot of good things, but we're not in the business to say we were close. They want to find ways to win, and it's just not happening. And it does start to really come into your mindset, you know, when things happen in a game and all of a sudden two quick goals, and, you know, mentally you're just like, oh, here we go again. We're in the same situation. So, you know, to answer your question, I don't know how you know, structurally change anything. I think individually you just have to make sure that you know that that's a major shift, and you have to come out and play the next shift, your next shifts, the best that you can. And you know, even if you have to take a little bit away to make a safe play to get yourself out of danger, that's something that I think that they can do a lot better.
Let's get to a positive. Alex Vlasic scored his first goal of the season, his first since February 9th of last season. It came in a 4-3 overtime loss here at the United Center to the New York Rangers. Kind of wild to think that was just the fourth goal by a Chicago defenseman this season. The other three, two of them have come from Seth Jones, who's not in the lineup right now, and the other one was Isaac Phillips, who's currently in Rockford. So they didn't have any goals among defensemen that were dressed tonight in this hockey game. When a Blackhawks team that's struggling to score 5-on-5, and when their power play goes dry like it has the last couple games, you feel like you need those extra bonus contributions from defensemen too.
Yeah, but they're not, you know, they're not really built offensively on the blue line. There's really not a guy there that drives the offense. And you look at Murphy, you know, he's not an offensive player. Martinez was brought in to kind of solidify the defensive side of it. You know, Brody at 34 years of age, you know, he's not the offensive player that he was when he was playing with Calgary. Allen is not an offensive player. Kaiser, you know, he's talking about defense first mentality, and Vlasic, you know, he'd probably be the most offensive guy with Seth Jones out of the lineup. But they, you know, they have to find some production there. And again, you know, defense a lot of times, unless you're a Quinn Hughes, you get a McAvoy on Boston, unless you have one of those type of players, you know, people, the defense on other teams score goals because they find shooting lanes and there's traffic in front of the net. And that's how the majority of the goals are scored by defensemen in the NHL, with traffic in front of the net where the goaltender can't see it. It doesn't have to be a hard shot if there's traffic in front of the net, but you have to create that that screen. You have to take away the eyes of the goaltender. And that's something, you know, again, I think the Blackhawks, and we've talked about that several times over the course of the season so far, and I've talked about it in the keys, and it's always a key, is getting traffic to the front of the net, and that will increase your output from the blue line there. We saw one shot, well, it was Kurashev who shot the puck from the high slot area out near the blue line. It was a great one-timer. They set it up the way that they needed to, but the two wingers were way off to the side of the net on both sides there, and the goaltender Swayman makes an easy save of that. So, you know, those are just plays that they can be better, and how do you manufacture more goals, create more offense? It's simply by, you know, paying the price and not being fancy, and you look at the guys who are scoring goals this season, you know, Smith with 6, Foligno with 7, and then Donato with 10. You know, those guys aren't making fancy plays.
Right.
They're going to the front of the net looking for, you know, greasy, ugly, dirty goals, whatever you want to call them. And I think that there needs to be an overall bigger concentration in that area with your top 6 offensive guys.
Sticking on the topic of Alex Vlasic, the Four Nations tournament rosters got announced earlier today. Blackhawks have one representative. Teuvo Teravainen will be representing Finland. Connor Bedard left off Team Canada. Alex Vlasic left off Team USA. I don't think any of us are surprised that Vlasic wasn't included on Team USA, but I think at the very least, the fact that he was even in the conversation feels like a huge leap in where he has come over the last couple years, and for sure I think has played his way onto the radar for Team USA in the 2026 Olympics.
No doubt about it, and that's just a credit to the way that people look at Vlasic and how he skates, how he plays. At 23 years of age, 6'6", 225, you know, who wouldn't want him on your team? And just because he didn't make it this year, you know, that's, if he did, that would be a huge bonus. And I know that there was, you know, some speculation out there, but to your point, Charlie, he's on the radar, and as you move forward, he's only going to get better. As some of the older guys on Team USA, their defense get a little bit older, you're looking for that infusion of young players that are going to be there for a while, and Vlasic is certainly going to be there if his progression continues the way he has the last couple seasons since he's been full-time in the NHL. The sky's the limit, and it's great for him. I'm happy for him. I don't think that he expected to be on the team, but when you hear your name being kind of rumored in the equation, you get a little bit excited. I don't know if he's disappointed or not. He would certainly love to be in that position, but just to be in the radar, just to be in the conversation is something that's fantastic, not only for him, but for the Blackhawks.
I talked to him after morning skate today, and he just seemed honored that he was even part of the conversation. He watched his cousin, Mark Edward Vlasic, represent Team Canada, and he said, "I saw him participating in those international tournaments, and that kind of was a dream of his, but for it to actually come about of being in the conversation, I'm sure for him has been an honor. But I think for him, the fact that he's played his way onto the radar for Team USA speaks to his versatility as well, because it feels like when he got drafted by Chicago, he was kind of pegged as this shutdown type defenseman, but he's really rounded out his offensive game as well, where the ceiling of who he could be as a player has kind of elevated because he's getting power play time now. And, you know, I don't think that's an ideal role for him long term, but the fact that he can do that in a potential international tournament where, you know, if you're bringing a guy like Alex Vlasic onto the roster, he's going to play his role very well of being a shutdown guy. But if you need him to step up in more of an offensive type role or contribute offensively, you know that he can do that as well.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when you started off this conversation, you talked about him being humbled and honored to be in the conversation. That really speaks a lot about his character, because he truly is. He's a great young man, and you know, for him, I don't think he doesn't get ahead of himself. You know, he realizes who he is, and I think you're only scratching the surface of what his capabilities are offensively, and you see it more and more with the confidence that he has. You know, and when this team becomes more of an overall contender, you'll see that role step up because he's going to have better support in all areas that he's maybe not getting now as this team kind of struggles. But you just see the potential. And I was talking to Darren Pang on the plane. We sit together on the plane and we were talking about it. And when Vlasic, maybe it was the Columbus game or something, but he went flying through the neutral zone.
And, yeah, yep, it was Columbus.
And Darren was in between the benches there, and a couple of the players kind of looked over at him, and the look was like wow, I mean, that's pretty special. And so you're getting that recognition not only from people watching the game, but people in the game realize, like, when a guy is skating that fast and he's 6'6", and you're sitting on the bench and, you know, it doesn't look like it's moving that fast from up here. But when you're down at ice level, those guys are flying by at 6'6", and you're going like, whoa, that's something special. So, you know, he's even getting the recognition from other teams, players, watching the game, and that's really special. And he's just a good kid, and I don't think he's going to get ahead of himself. And, you know, when the time's right, he'll be in the equation for Team USA and should be well-deserved at that point.
For Team Canada, Connor Bedard isn't on that team officially, barring, you know, potential injuries, or maybe he could be one of the runner-ups, but I kind of doubt it given how deep Canada's roster is and some of the guys that didn't make it. Connor did an interview with TNT before the game, and he kind of admitted that he wasn't really playing up to the level of being a kind of a slam dunk for Team Canada. He's been good, but I think this is going to be a good learning lesson for him. Just kind of to round out his overall game, and boy, I would be shocked if he's not on the 2026 Olympics to kind of learn from this.
I'm really glad that Team Canada didn't feel forced to include Connor Bedard. It would be an injustice to a bunch of players in the NHL who have had better seasons than Connor. You can't just go in there with your name. There is certain players that are going to get the benefit of the doubt, but they're much more experienced players, tail end of their careers type players. And for Bedard, you know, he hasn't been a player that should be on, you know, the top Canadian roster. That's just a fact. Now, I think that he's, as he said, he's going to use that as motivation. And he's not, I don't think he's feeling slighted by it because of, you know, his answer in there talking about that, you know, he feels that he didn't deserve that opportunity. And I'm glad that they just didn't hand it to him. But at the same time, you know what, he wants to be that type of player.
Right.
And if there was motivation for Team Canada to include Connor Bedard this year, it would be because they're looking at him, they're grooming him for a couple years from now when it comes to the Olympics, just to get that understanding of playing in that type of competition, best on best. And so that would be the reason why I think Team Canada would do that. But you know, they can't afford to make that decision right now. They have to try and win this one. This is a four nations. I mean, you know, you're missing a couple of the big countries, obviously. But, you know, this is going to be a great tournament and a great opportunity for the NHL to showcase their talent. And there's a lot of it on all these teams. My goodness, you look at it, you know, how good these teams are. And, you know, that's just an incentive for Connor to be better as they move forward. It's been a struggle for him, talking with Dennis Savard again earlier, and you know, some of the struggles, and he brought up a real good point, and I've talked about this. There's never going to be an easy game for Connor Bedard, and there hasn't been basically his whole life up to juniors, including juniors. The focus in a game is to have an understanding of where Bedard is and to shut him down, take away time and space. And he's learning how difficult it is to play at this level. Some of the things that he probably got away with in juniors and coming up into this level, he's not going to get away with in this game. The players are too good. And so it's a learning curve for him, and he knows he needs to be better, and good for him to recognize that. And I think he's going to be better for it moving along here, because, you know, he's going to have to understand that you know, just because his name is Connor Bedard and the expectations are so high and what he has done, he's still going to have to earn every opportunity to play for, you know, his country.
Yeah, I think more than anything, he's probably more so disappointed in himself that he didn't play his way into the conversation harder.
I agree with you. I mean, he's hard on himself that way, and he wants to be the best, and he wants to be, he's very driven. He's one of the more driven players I've ever seen. I mean, his whole focus in life is all about hockey, and maybe that's not the best thing. I mean, you know, you have to have some different things going on as well, but, you know, this young man is so focused on what he needs to do.
And last thing, too, we should contextualize. He's going to play this entire season at 19 years old. He's technically still eligible to play in the World Juniors. That's how young he is still. And he hasn't played in that tournament in 2 years. And that the year he did at 17 years old, he was the best player by a mile. So yeah. It's like he's still extremely young, and he's going to be representing Team Canada for many, many years to come.
Yeah, you forget that. He's still only 19.
It's unbelievable. So, yeah,
there is going to be no easy game, and it's not going to get any easier. So, you know, the only thing you can do is dig down and work harder to hone your craft, and he certainly does that. And, you know, he's going to have to figure out how he needs to play to be successful. Right now I think he's playing a little bit too much on the outside, too much on the perimeter. He's not getting those shots through because he's not getting in the inside of the protection. So he's always shooting through a lot of screens and stuff. And again, you know, the awareness of the opposition team, you're playing up against, you know, the other team's top forwards or the top shutdown line, the top pairing of defense, you know, that all kind of factors into making it a lot tougher.
All right, good stuff, Troy. It looks like the Pat Maroon fan club is here at the United Center waiting for Pat to come out and acknowledge. Drive home safe. I was just looking at the weather radar. I know John Weideman was doing a great weather report prior to sending it over to us. I was waiting for the news, the sports updates. I was just going to give it all to him. All right. Good stuff, Troy. We are we're waiting on some sound to come in. Our guy Jack isn't back yet, but looks like Luke Richardson is speaking to the media now. Hopefully we'll have that and some others who talked from the post game. Got the Blackhawks post game show rolling on after this on 720 WGN.
Breakaway now for Geeky down the slot, Hawk zone. He shoots and scores for Morgan Geeky. That's his second goal of the night.
Back here at the United Center, where the Blackhawks fell to the Boston Bruins 4-2. That goal was Morgan Geeky's second of the game, his third and fourth of the season. That kind of put the dagger in the heart of Chicago, 5 minutes and 2 seconds into the third period. Hawks actually really pushed in the opening minutes of that third period. I think shots were 4-0 in the first three or so minutes. It was unfortunate they weren't able to capitalize. Nick Foligno had a grade-A chance about 13 seconds into the period, and it went right into the crest of Jeremy Swayman, kind of near the right armpit area, so it feels like if it was just a couple more inches to the left, it maybe would have squirted inside his, you know, underneath his arm. But unfortunately, didn't go. Swayman ended up stopping it, and Foligno kind of looked up, like knowing that he missed a grade A opportunity. I thought the Hawks turned in, I think it was a shift or two after that, an excellent shift by Connor Bedard, Tyler Bertuzzi, and then Taylor Hall went off the ice. Ryan Donato jumped onto the ice because Hall was at the end of his shift, and so it was by Bertuzzi, Bedard, and Donato. They spent a good chunk of the end of that shift in the offensive zone. They weren't able to capitalize, and you thought the Blackhawks were going to make that strong push, and they were like, okay, this is exactly the kind of energy they needed to start that third period. And when Morgan Geeky scored that goal 5 minutes into the third to make it 4-2, feels like that kind of took the wind out of the sails by the Blackhawks after that really strong start to the third period. Let's get to a new sponsor here on the Blackhawks postgame show. Tonight's Player of the Game, which is sponsored by Burger King. Get your $5 Whopper Jr. today. You rule. I'm going to give this one up to Brad Marchand. The captain of the Boston Bruins scored two goals in a 2 minute and 5 second span in the second period. He also had 7 shot attempts and 3 shots on goal. If Boston wants to get this season back on track, which appears like they have, they're in a playoff spot. They've now won 6 of their last 8 games under new Bruins interim head coach Joe Sacco. they're going to need Brad Marchand to be one of the players to step up, as well as David Pastrnak, who had two assists in this game, logged north of 20 minutes of ice time. He also had three shots on goal. Pastrnak was one of the guys I highlighted in the pregame show. He has only 8 goals this season, only 3 of them at 5-on-5, and Boston has been they've really struggled to score at 5-on-5 this season, particularly under Jim Montgomery. That was they had only 31 5-on-5 goals in 20 games. That was probably one of the reasons that led to the firing of Jim Montgomery. But Boston has kind of turned it around here as of late. But yeah, my player of the game goes to Brad Marchand of the Boston Bruins. Tough night for Alec Martinez. He was a -4 on the ice for all 4 goals against, and I should preface this by saying he did leave the game with 11:15 left in the first period after blocking a shot. It looked like off the right knee from former Blackhawk defenseman Jordan Osterley. Martinez was really struggling to at the bench. He ended up leaving to go to the locker room, returned to take one more shift, and that shift lasted like 1:14. And it ended up being the first Bruins goal. Then it looked like Martinez left again, didn't play the rest of the first period. He returned for the start of the second period. You could tell he gave it a whirl right before the period started. Went back to the bench, and I saw him talking to the trainers. Looked like he was kind of nodding them off, but you could tell like he was still in some discomfort. And it looked like the first few shifts after that, he was still laboring. Like, he didn't have the same kind of burst in that right leg. And so we'll see how that impacts him moving forward. I believe the Hawks are going to practice tomorrow, so I wouldn't be surprised if I see a maintenance day for Alec Martinez after this one. He also blocked 4 shots, all of which came in the first period. So he was kind of laying his body on the line early in this game, and he ended up being on the ice for all of the other 3 goals after that first one. And so tough night for him. I think he'd be the first one to say it as well. TJ Brody ended up sliding into the power play quarterback situation for the power play that the Blackhawks had when Martinez was inside the locker room. I also want to shout out to Jason Dickinson. He scored a goal late in the second period that kind of gave the Blackhawks some life, and it was a massive goal because it feels like if you went into that second period intermission down 2, it potentially felt kind of insurmountable given how that game was going through 40 minutes. Jeremy Swayman started to find his game as well, and Boston had a lot of the momentum. They were generating their chances, so for him to score that late goal probably energized the Blackhawks in the second period, and then we saw the fruits of it in the first 5 or so minutes of that third period. And by the way, Dickinson, it was his 5th goal of the season. All 5 of them have come at the United Center, so he hasn't scored a goal on the road yet this season. All right, Connor Murphy was one of the players that spoke inside the locker room. He had 2 assists in this game, logged 21 minutes of ice time. It's the second multi-point game of the season for Murphy. Let's hear what he had to say after this loss.
Kind of keep going over the same topics, but you know, you guys get a lead again, and what happens where, you know, they're able to take control and it's hard to get back again.
Yeah, we did it to ourselves again. We were sloppy. Seems like we were sloppy with the puck when we had a lull. There's going to be sometimes lulls in periods like we had, and we got to be able to manage that and not do damage to ourselves with costly turnovers and just a bit of sloppy play.
How difficult is this time, though, because you seem when you're repetitive with this stuff?
Yeah, it's not. I think the thing that we don't like to see is our bench and our emotion lacking. Sometimes you saw in the second period what helped us was Patty Maroon getting a little bit of jawing with Zadorov, drawing a penalty and then having a little feistiness. That's part of hockey, and that brings emotion out of everyone. And it felt like we had times when our momentum went the other way. We seemed dejected, and that's not a good thing. Just because we're losing some games here, we got to keep the pedal moving forward and make sure that we're being juiceful for each other.
You get a team that was coming off an overtime game the night before, and you weren't able to capitalize on that they weren't tired at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, well, they didn't do anything really that significant, I don't think, to us, and that's the kind of the the summary of a lot of these ones. It's something that we feel like we're making costly mistakes and, like I said, sloppiness with ourselves, everyone, and other teams are just waiting and praying on that.
Did it take a little wind out of the guys' sails when Marchand had the two within about 2 minutes of each other there in the second period?
Two goals?
Yeah.
I did, yeah. I think because, again, it felt like self-errors. We iced it, and then they beat us on a face-off play that we usually should be able to cover. So it's just part of it, and when you have a D-zone draw against top players, you got to know how to go through coverage, and then the other goals just... Like I said, you know that they're their top scorers, and when momentum's not going the other way, we got to really hunker down and be responsible.
That was Blackhawks defenseman Connor Murphy talking after this one. Another disappointing loss at the United Center for the Blackhawks. We have more to get to on the Blackhawks postgame show, including our save of the game, and then we'll play a little bit of Luke Richardson's postgame press conference coming up on 720 WGN.
Now from the right circle, Pastrnak put it down to the doorstep, though, and a shot and turned out of there by Mrazek. Point-blank shot by Lindholm was stopped, and then a follow-up shot by Marchand misses the net and sweeps behind and around and down to the Boston blue line.
That was tonight's save of the game, which is sponsored by the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. Learn more at comed.com/poweringbiz. Not really a goaltending battle here in Chicago in this game tonight. Just kind of a lower event kind of game. Shots were 27-22 in favor of Boston. Mrazek stopped 23 of his 27 for an save percentage of .852, and Jeremy Swayman stopped 20 of 22 for a save percentage of .909. Jeremy Swayman, by the way, has really turned it around over these last five starts. His previous 14 starts, he was 5-7-2, 3.47 goals against average, and .884 save percentage. His last four starts coming into this game, he had a .929 save percentage and 1.78 goals against average. That has been a noticeable difference since the firing of Jim Montgomery. He's definitely upped his play. All right, Blackhawks head coach Luke Richardson spoke to the media just a little bit ago. Let's listen in and see what he had to say about this one.
Specifically, I know Dickinson scored at the end of the second, but when Brad Marchand scored those two goals within about 2 minutes, did that kind of hurt you guys, set you back a little bit?
Yeah, no, for sure. And, I thought we didn't have really a lot of offense in the first half of the game other than the first goal, which was a nice goal. And then, they kind of turned it on, and I thought in the second period we just had trouble managing the puck, which what we talked about the first half of the game. And I thought once we got going, I think some parts of the second half of the game we were much better because we got into their zone and got some good shifts down low, and kind of led to some momentum and Dickinson's goal to kind of pull us within one. But it's hard when you're chasing pretty much the whole game. I thought it's exhausting, and guys try to do too much, and then we kind of get off our game plan for a little bit, and then it takes a lot to work to get back on it. So it is tough when you're playing from behind a lot of these games, and it takes a lot out of us. So how do we do that? Is we score first like we did, but we got to continue to keep pushing forward and try and keep leads and help us out in that department.
Is there anything that Boston was doing that was making offense difficult?
Not really. I think the first part of the game we didn't manage the puck as well as we did to late second half of the game, and I thought we had some really good shifts going right before they got the breakaway goal in the third. I thought we had some good sustained time in the zone and some chances. Unfortunately, we didn't score, and a guy came off the bench and got in behind our D and on a blocked shot and got a breakaway. So that was tough timing on our part, but I think we were playing okay at that point in the third period, so it would have been nice to keep it that way for a while longer, and we would have had made build off the momentum off those shifts before that, but unfortunately they scored there.
Martinez had a tough night.
Yeah, he had he's a warrior, and he blocked that shot, and he was pretty sore the rest of the game, but he marched on, and he looked like he was fine injury wise, but he was hurting pretty good the rest of the game. So that's just a tough night. Every time he was on the ice, they seem to score, but you know, not really anything directly to him. It just happened to be on the ice, so that happens sometimes. And you know, he's been through a lot in his career. I'm sure he's had that before, so he'll manage it fine.
What did you think of the way Connor Bedard played tonight?
He had some good chances. Like, I thought he had some good, you know, there was one time he tried a long backhand pass in the first period that got snapped off. But, you know, I think we talked about it after the first period. A few of us didn't manage the puck as we wanted to. But other than that, like, he backchecked hard on a few of those plays. And, you know, I mean, he had a couple shots that were blocked. Boston seemed to block a lot of shots. So that's probably frustrating for a guy that wants to get his shots through. And, you know, our power play, again, just wasn't clicking like we have been. I think we kind of, you know, in the last two games have gotten away from what we were doing well, which was just simple and moving it quick. And part of it is, I think, our entries. And we're chasing a lot. But Boston's always been a good penalty-killing team. So that, you know, when you get off your game in the special teams, sometimes your 5-on-5 game follows because you want to do a little bit too much and a little bit more for the team. But, you know, I thought he was had some jump in the second half of the game and had some good shots on net.
I know earlier you talked about Bertuzzi kind of trending that, but when you look at the offensive woes, is he one of those guys that you need to just start producing?
Yeah, we need the whole team to kind of do that for sure. But, you know, Bert's a guy that's used to scoring, and, you know, I think he's had some good opportunities lately, and even tonight, and I think it was the end of the first period, he had a chance that usually he might slam home there. It's one of those greasy ones. It was a rebound, but they play you hard, and I think he was battling with a guy, and he got a stick on the puck, and it just hit the side of the net. So we need some of those to start going in, and sometimes you have to have that internal will to make something happen, and we got to get to that. Just stingy, get a little crusty out there, and get some direct line goals. And you know, Dickens' line was really good for us tonight. I thought they drove pucks deep, turned up, hit late guys, and hit, you know, that was the Vlasic, you know, they hit Murphy and then it ended up getting it back and hitting Vlasic in the slot, and that was kind of our second goal with Dickinson, very similar with Mikheyev turning up and finding him in that soft spot. So we just got to be comfortable getting through the neutral zone and playing some direct hockey and simple hockey right now.
That was Blackhawks head coach Luke Richardson. It sounded like he didn't like the puck management in this game for the Blackhawks. Weirdly, the giveaways were 19-6 in favor of Boston. There were some breakdowns, obviously, on Chicago's goals, but it didn't seem, at least on the giveaway sheet, that the Blackhawks were overly terrible in that regard. I want to do a quick update. When I was watching this game with the Blackhawks and Bruins, we were getting updates on what was going on in Rockford. They were playing the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, and they beat the Lehigh Valley 7-3. Five players had multi-point efforts, and I wanted to shout it out before we get to our final break here. Colton Dock had a goal and an assist. Brett Cini recorded two assists. Cole Gutman scored twice. And then more notably, the names Chicago knows very well, Landon Slaggart and Frank Nazar, both had one goal and two assists each and three shots on goal. Frank Nazar now has 24 points in 18 games this season. And that leads all that's second among all skaters in the AHL. Vinny Hinostroza, former Blackhawk and Chicago native, leads the AHL with 26 points. So Frank Nazar continues to impress down in Rockford. We'll see if he starts to play his way into the conversation of getting called up sooner than later. I've always said post-holiday, like after New Year's, to give him the first half of the season down in Rockford. Man, if he continues to produce, he's going to make it impossible for the Blackhawks not to at least consider doing it sooner. But we'll see what happens. But yeah, big night down in Rockford. All right, we got one more break, and then we're going to wrap up the Blackhawks post-game show after this on 720 WGN.
Has to go after it in the corner now. Shifley quickly back to Morrissey. Empty net jets. Morrissey from Pionk. Neil Pionk, shot, kicked away. Shifley scores!
That was Dan Robertson of TSN on the call of Winnipeg versus St. Louis on Tuesday. It was a goal by Mark Scheifele, the only goal by the Jets in a 4-1 loss on Tuesday to the Blues. That leads us to our next game preview, which is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Chicago, where they do it right the first time. Winnipeg is going to be here on Saturday at 2 p.m. Nice afternoon start again here at the United Center. Winnipeg is going to be in Buffalo on Thursday, though, before they're in Chicago on Saturday. But as of right now, they've lost four in a row in regulation, and they're being outscored 15-6 over that stretch. The Winnipeg Jets were... They started the season with 15 wins in 16 games, and it was the best start in NHL history. And since then, they're 3-7-0. What's crazy to think about is the second game of the season for Winnipeg was against Chicago. The Blackhawks were in Winnipeg. Arvid Soderblom came 64 seconds away from shutting out the Winnipeg Jets 1-0, but the Jets ended up tying it late in the third period. Then they won in overtime, ironically. Mark Scheifele scored both of those goals. And so you wonder how the trajectory would have changed or how we would have viewed the opening road trip for the Blackhawks, and that Winnipeg would have never gotten off to that historic start if the Blackhawks ended up handing them that start that loss if they did end up winning that game. Winnipeg is a really good special teams team. Second in power play percentage, 11th in penalty kill. Where their weakness is even strength. They have a minus 47 scoring chance differential at even strength. And I think that's where the Blackhawks, if you can keep the game at 5-on-5 as much as possible, I think that would benefit them greatly. And Connor Hellebuck, he has been terrific as usual. He has masked a lot of the flaws for Winnipeg over the last several years. He's off to a terrific start. Clear early Vezina Trophy front runner. He won it last season. He won it in 2020 as well. And if he would do so again, he would be the 13th goalie ever with 3+ Vezina trophies. So Hawks better be ready if Hellebuck is starting between the pipes here in Chicago. Blackhawks hockey is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Chicago, where they do it right the first time. Your Chicago and Northwest Indiana Hyundai dealers, Circa Sports Illinois, United Airlines, and Citgo. When you start with Citgo, you're good to go. Big thanks to all the help we got on the broadcast tonight, our on-site reporter of Jack Heinrich and our production crew of Brendan Rook and Frank Ruggieri. They were led by our captains, the engineers, Paul Zerang here at the United Center, and Krista Flores at the station. For John Weideman and Troy Murray, I'm Charlie Romeliotis signing off after a 4-2 Blackhawks loss to the Bruins. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you on Saturday afternoon from the United Center.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
You've been listening to Chicago Blackhawks Hockey on Blackhawks Radio, 720 WGN, streaming on WGNRadio.com, and through your smartphone with the WGN app.